Seatbelts on, check your mirrors, volume up. The Under Construction Podcast with Aidan Power and Pat Moore starts now. And here we are. Welcome to season two of Under Construction. We are back. We have a whole new series for you, and we have a whole new co-host. Not just his arms, not just his legs. He's brought his head as well, and he is, and his mouth, most importantly. He is Pat Moore, who's the commercial director for Chadwicks. Pat, welcome to the podcast. That's the only time I'm going to say it, because you're my co-host now. You are not a guest. Was that what elevated you from last year starring as a guest to now being co-host? Was it that you were the best guest of the season, or you drew the shortest straw in the office because nobody else wanted to work with me?
That's what he said today. He said the prima donna. So I was the only one that was left. No, look, it's great to be here. And it's super exciting for me to be co-hosted to yourself. Done the first episode last year. That was very good. Which means, though, that we got rid of everybody else and it's just you and me left. So I don't know how good that is.
But don't you worry. We've got some great guests to come and we'll get into them. So for Pat and anyone listening who hasn't had the pleasure of meeting you yet, I mentioned your commercial director. You're actually so good at, you have two job titles. You're the category director as well. I don't know what the difference is, but like day to day, what does that mean from a business point of view for you?
Effectively, I'm responsible for the product that's on shelf in the branch. So we obviously have a team of people, experts in there, category managers who look after all the sourcing of product, put it on the shelves for our customers. So that's effectively what it is.
Always an important job in these times we're living in, crucial.
Yeah, look, I think there's no question we've come out of obviously COVID and we've come into other crisis. The crisis in with Ukraine and Russia is now probably at the front of everybody's concerns. It is, for ourselves, look, more concern for the people themselves, but for us in the sector, it has meant price inflation and significant price inflation to the sector. So that's a concern. And then obviously that brings other challenges in relation to product availability. But look, we're working hard at that. We keep our customers hopefully happy and... You know, we're doing our best to do that and we're watching on a daily basis. So, yeah, it's a strange world.
We're going to cover a lot of topics relevant to the construction industry on this podcast, including today we're going to talk to Jennifer Byrne about the world of apprenticeship. She's a lecturer in construction. We'll find out more about that and the accessibility and pathways through that. But our first guest that we're going to meet momentarily, Peter Finn. We all know Pete the Builder from the telly. He is a builder. He doesn't just do it for the cameras. I've no doubt he'll be asking you questions about supply.
He will indeed, and he'll probably be looking for a few discounts, so I'm waiting for that too. And to be fair to Jennifer, Jennifer's positioned the lecturer in construction in TU Dublin. We are very mindful of labour in the sector ourselves, but also diversity within the construction sector, and we're trying to get more women into the sector, and Jennifer has certainly been pushing that boat, and in Chadwicks we want to try and help that as much as we can. So I'm really interested to hear what she has to say. She's had a lot of experience in the sector herself, so it's exciting.
We'll talk about supply and demand more with Pete in just a moment. We're also going to be talking about future-proofing in construction in a number of different areas with Pete. And across the series, timber, steel, building communities, safety on site, sustainability within building, off-site construction, outdoor living. I mean, how popular has that become, Pat? We could do a whole series on that.
You could, yeah. Look, we've only just recently released our own summer brochure where we're promoting a lot of outdoor products. But go back even to, you mentioned the retrofitting. Look, there's a big announcement made in relation to retrofitting over 500,000 houses in Ireland. That's huge for our sector and there's an awful lot involved in that and an awful lot of product that Chadwicks do involve in that. So the air tightness piece, ventilation, insulation, so, you know, heat pumps and timers. So there's huge, like, people have a lot of knowledge in this area. So again, and looking forward to talking to Pete.
I can see Pete outside the window. Let's get him in. So it's time to welcome our very first guest of season two of the podcast. And there was much debate, lasted about 2 minutes, between me and Pat as to who would be our very first guest. And on the assistance of Pat, and only rightly so, there's only one man we could bring in to kick off this new season because he is the poster boy of the construction industry.
He's the only one that's not busy, so.
He's the only one doing more dancing on Instagram and TikTok than he is actual work. It's Peter Finn, a.k.a. Pete the Builder. Good to see you again, Peter.
Cheers, Aidan. What an intro. Thank you very much. And Pat, I really appreciate the support.
Thanks.
He's a follower like many others. Thanks for joining us. I guess a lot has happened. Pat and I have touched on it since we last spoke. What have been the biggest changes for you in the past 12 months or so, Pete?
Well, look, we might as well get straight to the point. The price of materials has you know, just gone through the roof in a lot of aspects, and also we have a huge amount of demand. The pandemic has kind of started to tail off a little bit, so we're kind of half getting back to normality. People have been living at home. They want to get work done on their homes. There's a housing crisis. There's retrofitting happening left, right and centre. There's grants from the SEAI. There's domestic jobs happening. So there's a huge demand and there's a lot of fluctuation in price. It is a crazy time. It is the perfect storm of construction. Boom, boom.
Okay, let's zero in on one of those issues to kick off. And that is near zero carbon emissions and the like, and energy efficiency. There's like you say, a huge emphasis on it now. There's grants available to improve the efficiency of your home. So just how popular is it in your line of work?
Yeah, look, absolutely, Aidan. There's a huge challenge out there globally. Let's be totally honest here. We've got the battle against carbon, and we've got this sustainability issue happening across the planet, and there's been huge targets set to governments by the different bodies, the global bodies, and, like, you know, there's huge targets that have to be met by 2030 and then again by 2050. So part of that is the SEAI grants that have come out, these are government-driven grants to improve the sustainability and the carbon emissions that are coming from our homes. So it's absolutely necessary. It's absolutely positive. What it's generated is a huge amount of work that needs to be done to the homes, and they are incentivizing that work to be done by giving grants. And some of the grants have been quite healthy, and they certainly are incentivizing people to get work done to their homes. So that has created a lot of work for people like myself and people in the industry, which is definitely a positive. And the challenges are we have an increase in cost of those materials since the grants have come out, and we also have a huge labour shortage. So, you know, there's lots of challenges. But look, come here, the construction industry is a challenge. Every day that you wake up, you've got challenges, and that's the interesting and good thing about it. There's always something new. There's always a different challenge that you've got to face each day.
Okay. Those current challenges then, when it does come to retrofitting and renovating a property, and then there's other categories within that, maintaining it, improving it over the long term. What are the biggest challenges that you've had to adapt to as a tradesman in terms of knowledge base, skill base in the last number of years?
Yeah, well, look, the transition in terms of technology over the last 10 years, look at your mobile phone, like the levels that stepped up in terms of the technology increases, and building materials has been the same. Huge investment has gone in. I'm sure Pat will tell you this, like, if you're looking at the materials that Chadwicks have in stock now in comparison to the materials they would have had in 20 years ago, like, I can't do a job for an architect without being asked for a data sheet, without being asked for the background information into that product, because we have adapted the way that we do our buildings. We're making our buildings much more airtight, which is a positive thing, but you have to be careful then that you don't suffocate the building. So, you know, breathability, all these type of things have to be taught about now. You have to be careful with what materials you use together. You can't just start going straight in and throwing two new materials together. They may not be compatible. They may, you know, increase the thermal productivity of the building, but they may, you know, suffocate the building. So there's loads of stuff. You have to upskill yourself. You have to upgrade the hardware in your brain and your construction knowledge. If you're too old school and just going in and bashing things out the way that you used to years ago, you'll probably find out you're going to get yourself into a little bit of bother in terms of building sweating. You know,
yeah,
sometimes
you probably hit that. That's the key at the moment. Everybody wants a warmer house, and everyone's going for the bin, the envelope, and the ends up retrofitting and air tightness and passive housing. And the one key element of that is it all sounds great, and it is great. The ventilation piece is being missed. That's a massive part. You probably see that.
Absolutely.
You're seeing it. We obviously see it, because we can, you know, we're obviously training all of our people up on NZ retrofitting and NZ training. And you know, we've done the course myself when he finished it last week. And you can see, like, it's a fantastic benefit to the homeowner, and the way we've built, where we've gone from building houses, where you're building houses now, and what's involved in air tightness and insulation and mechanical ventilation and windows and the sunlight. So it's fantastic, and you will see we'll be building better homes.
Yeah,
but the difficulty is the insulation piece and the ventilation piece.
Yeah, it's like anything that's new, Pat. First of all, there's a little bit of resistance. You know, if you're used to doing something a certain way and you're good at it and you're quick at it and you know your price at it, if somebody starts asking you to do it in a different way, there's a little bit of resistance there. You want to keep doing the thing that you know yourself. But also, you know, so many things are changing in terms of, you know, fossil fuels are going to start, you know, being a thing of the past. So we're transitioning into new green energy, which again is absolutely positive for the planet, and it's the right thing that's going to have to happen. But we've got so many houses then that aren't suitable for the likes of an air-to-water heat pump unless, you know, the properties within the house are upgraded for. So if you just literally take Aidan for yourself, like, you know, would be an example of if you've got a house that was built in the 80s and the same insulation is in it from the 80s and then suddenly you just put in a new heating system, it's just going to go straight out to the roof. So that's, you know, look, it is fairly simple stuff, but unless you understand it, unless you go through it in the proper detail and get the right education on it, you can make mistakes. So, you know, that's I suppose the challenges that us as builders have to face. It's a little bit like going back to school again and a bit re-educating yourself and, you know, understanding, you know, the systems, how they work, and make sure you implement them in the correct way.
And you also need to be knowledgeable then about the grants that are available to customers when they come asking you, going, I want to retrofit my house, I want to get up to an NZ standard, what's available to me, how much can I get for that?
Yeah, and it's different because if you're starting with a new build, you know, usually the specification is there already from the architect, so you're kind of working off that. But if you're retrofitting a home, you know, there's a lot of other elements that you have to take into play, you know, so you have to kind of have knowledge of both things, and you have to take a lot of things into account, you know.
Pete, if I'm going to look at a retrofit, yeah, so where do I start? If you're talking to Punter, where should we start?
I definitely would say, you know, for people to upskill themselves, check stuff out. Like, you know, if you go onto the SEAI website, I wouldn't say it's completely transparent, but you get an awful lot of information that is fairly easy to understand. And then you can ask an architect, ask an engineer, ask a builder, ask a tradesperson, and they will kind of join the dots for you a little bit if you're someone who doesn't understand these things. The information is out there. You know, I think the whole world has got a lot more transparent, and the old school days of the builder, oh, geez, don't worry about that low oil, sort that out for you, that's gone now. Mm. Do you know what I mean? Like, you know, prices are transparent. Everything that you do is transparent. You get a handover manual for your house at the end of your house. Like, so, you know, transparency is out there. And if somebody's not giving you that transparency, well, then you're not with the right person. Right.
Yeah. And I think, look, some, even going back to the piece of where most times in this retrofit, depending on how deep it is, you're going to have to move out. People, they don't take that in consideration.
And how long could that be for? How long is a piece of string kind of thing? What's...
Oh, jeez, I don't know about that. Now.
Depending how much Pete wants.
How long am I going to be able to be mother for?
No, look, that, like, you're dead right. And another problem that we've got here, geez, we're going through a lot of social issues here, but, you know, renting these days, like, if you were moving out of your house to rent somewhere, first of all, can you get it? Can you get a short-term rent? Very unlikely. And how much is it going to cost you? So you're not just talking about your own build, you're talking about then your build plus your rent while you're moved out. And that's why, from our point of view as builders, we do have deadlines that we've got to meet. And those deadlines, like, literally the landlord of the person, like, where the person is renting, is saying to them, you have to be gone by that date, because I've got someone else to move in, and I've given you a 6 month contract or whatever, you know. So there's a lot of these pressures coming along. Then you add in then that maybe your windows or maybe some of the materials aren't as readily available as they used to be. So there's a lot of those pressures going on. So you're better off giving yourself a little bit of redundancy when you're doing jobs as a builder. I do always, like, if I think I'm going to get it done in 6 months, I'll tell them, the client, that it's going to take 7 months or maybe a bit more. You definitely have to put some caveats into your pricing. Like, if I'm given a price at the moment, I have to say, listen, raw materials at this moment in time are at this price, but I can't guarantee, because if I price now, I'm not going to do the job until 6 months time, you know, or could be 6 months time, and certainly could be 6 months time, but I get to the point when I'm maybe fitting the roof or putting it on, and the price of timber could have either gone up higher or it may have come down lower. So what I'm starting to do, and most QSs and architects are kind of absorbing and taking this, and clients are as well, I'm kind of saying, well, listen, at this moment in time, I can give you like a PC sum for this part of the job, especially when it comes to raw materials like steel, if there's any copper or zinc and timber as well. You kind of say, I will come back to you on that price and I'll keep you up to date on it. And most people are accepting that because it's too much risk. The builder is actually being asked to take the risk on board there. You know, if I wanted to take risk, I'd go down to Paddy Power, you know.
So you can't commit to a price on a job that you're not going to even begin in 6 months, yeah, given when prices are changing by the day.
You can commit to a price, but there has to be certain sections of the job that are allowed to be flexible. So you put in, like, it's known as a PC sum. It's an amount of money that's a realistic amount of money towards a certain aspect of the job. And that would usually happen when it comes to fitted furniture, when it comes to sanitary ware and that type of stuff. That's fairly, and windows and doors, that's something that has been there for years. But me now, when I'm doing my pricing, I say also the steel, structural steel is going to, because, like, structural steel, like, the cost of it now in comparison to 18 18 months ago. Like, it's twice the price. You know?
It's nearly 300%. Yeah. If you look at different sectors, to be fair to Pete and everybody else that's working in the construction sector, it's such a fragile market at the moment. It's like it's 7-day quotes. You know, some people are offering 1-day quotes. The prices are so fragile at the moment and fragmented that it's changing nearly on a 24-hour basis. So to commit to even 3 months or 4 months is a stretch. If you look at what's happened within the timber sector, you're looking at price increases of over 60%, insulation of over 100%. You know, now there's a lot of contributions toward that with world shortages, manufacturers who are struggling with raw material shortages. You know, dare we say that the conflict that's going on between Ukraine and Russia is all adding to the problems in relation to oil and gas and heating. They're all adding pressures to the both the builder and the homeowner. So Pete's spot on. Like, it's, you know, you've got to be very careful as a builder. What you're pricing today may not be the price in 2 weeks' time, never mind 2 months.
No, it may come down, Pat. It's not always going to go up, but at the moment it's only going one way. But hopefully things will start to stabilise. Do you have any ideas when they might start stabilising?
If I had a crystal ball, I'd be a millionaire when they're going to stabilise. I think, look, there's a lot of factors. I said there's a lot of factors in there. There's still demand in the rest of Europe. There's still demand in the States. There's still demand in the UK, which is driving price. But a lot of it's been driven by the shortage of raw material and the cost of manufacturing. As I said to you, like, you've still got to look at utilities, you look at labour costs, you look at shortage of labour. You have to pay good money to get a good person to come in and work for you. Yeah. And that all like saturates into your business and saturates into your margin, and you've got to be careful of what you do there.
So is there anything, any advice you can impart, Pat, that maybe tradespeople wouldn't already know? Like, Pete seems to have a fairly good handle on, well, the current situation, what he can and can't do.
Yeah, look, I think it goes back to depends on the size of the builder you are. If you're a small to medium-sized builder, chances are you know what your next job is going to be and you can pre-buy. And if you have a yard or a shed, you can do a little bit of buying. Otherwise, Pete's doing exactly the right thing. You give a quote, but you have to, you know, emphasise the fact this may be a different quote within the next 2 months. And you've got to give that bit of leeway with that 5% at 10%. You wouldn't know that kind of figure until you get to that point. But certainly you would be prudent to, if where you can, if you go out, the sooner you buy the product, the better. And then you don't want to overhedge that either in case the price comes down. But say for 2022, it would be unusual to see anything happen other than.
Yeah. The other challenge we have, huge challenge, is labour shortage. So, like, during the pandemic, a lot of the foreign workers went back home, rightfully so, because things slowed down here. And they've stayed because the gap between what they're earning here and what they're earning at home has narrowed. And also the price of rent here is so high. So they're saying to themselves, okay, I can earn a little bit less in my home country, stay close to my family, or I can travel and earn a bit more. But the rent, particularly in Ireland and particularly in Dublin, is so high that it doesn't balance out. So a lot of those guys have actually said, well, I'm not going to bother coming back. And there's no incentives for them to come. And we've got a huge labour shortage. And I know you've got Jennifer coming in later on. And like, I think it's so important that we start focusing on getting more people into construction. And the way that construction is viewed needs to change. Because let's be honest, you know, I know we're construction people here, but construction industry is one of the biggest industries in the country. It drives booms and busts. It does all of those things. And yet we're still kind of considered maybe second class when it comes to industries. And we need to change that, Pat. Me and you together, let's do this.
Hold on a second now. I push a pen, so let's not go overboard here.
Well, maybe you can have a chat with Jennifer Byrne, who's a lecturer in construction and works particularly in the area of apprenticeship programs and the access to apprenticeships. Is that an area, because I take your point about people going home to countries that they're originally from and not coming back because it's just economically it's not effective. We probably can't get them back anytime soon, but is the apprenticeship platform in that area a place to look to?
Absolutely it is. So like, I've got nephews, I've got, you know, nieces, I've got people that I know from the GAA club and that type of stuff, and they come to me and they ask me, you know, during their TY, their transition year, can I come and work with you for a while? I love that. I bring them on board. It gives them an opportunity to work, you know, in construction for a while. They can see, do they enjoy it or not? And an awful lot of them keep on coming back for their summer work and that type of stuff with me, and a lot of them then have gone into construction because they've seen what it's like. It's a nice lifestyle. You get paid pretty well, and you know, it is a viable industry.
And is that easy for you to do? And I mean, in a way, like, you know, one thing you always hear now, regardless of what you do, you mentioned GAA earlier on, I'm involved in GAA, and the worst thing, everything that comes up every time you try to do something is insurance. Like, how easy is it for you to rock someone can rock them and say, bring me to work, Pete, for 2 weeks.
Well, like, if they're through the transition year, you're covered because they get a form and you basically sign it off for them and they come in and they do a transition year, which is, so that's fine, so you're covered off that way. And then summer work, once they're of the right age, is no problem at all. You pay them through the books. Like, you're not talking cash in hand here. You pay them through the books and they're with you, you know, working away, usually as a labourer. But what's happened then is, like, my own nephew, he's gone and he's travelled and he went away with his mates. And I remember this when I was serving my own apprenticeship. All my mates went away to Australia, and the lads who got the jobs first were the tradesmen. So the, you know, fellas in college studying accountancy, studying, you know, lots of different things, they'd land in a place like that, and within a couple of days the tradesmen were working and they were paying for the digs for the other lads, and they were going then getting jobs in like, you know, restaurants and bars and this type of stuff, you know what I mean? So I genuinely feel that if you have an apprenticeship and then you become a tradesperson, you literally have a ticket to travel. You're able to go to any country and you'll be the first person to get the job straight away, male or female. If you've got a trade, you go to Australia, like they're giving out cheap flights, you know, to try and get people to come from Ireland across now to Australia. We should be doing it the other way around. But but like that's where it's at. Whereas if you're in college and you haven't got a full qualification, you won't get a job in an office or whatever. And look, come here, try it, and if you don't like it, you know you can move on to something else.
It goes back to the piece that you mentioned earlier on, but in relation to what you've seen differently when you started and where we are now as a sector, and I mean that around health and safety. I see you. You're dressed to the nines. You've got the best of gear on. You know, you've got, I do wonder sometimes if you do any work, your trousers are always clean, your jackets are spotless, and there's never anything on your gloves.
You need to do a week with me, and you'll know exactly what I'm like, Chief. Don't you worry.
And in relation then to, and I have to put a plug in for our own business, Chadwicks, in relation to builders merchants in particular, as like you've obviously seen some massive trends, changes there in relation to product availability, you know, the change of product expertise. Can you give us any insight into that?
Yeah, 100%. Like the days of going in and talking to somebody in Chadwicks that doesn't know what they're talking about are gone. You know, and that's the truth of it. You know what I mean? Like people are upskilled now, and they have to be, because we're talking about earlier on about the technology of products. You know, so there's lots of different avenues of the same product, if that makes sense. There's lots of different functions, and if you don't have the knowledge, so you're going in talking to someone behind the counter and you're saying, listen, I want a certain type of insulation, I would often be asked the question, what are you using it for? And I'm like going, at least he cares, and at least, you know, or she cares, and they want them to know what I'm doing it for, because there's two or three different options. And that type of stuff is definitely, it's a huge help when you're someone who's you know, going in as a you know, I people seem to think I get stuff off Chadwicks for free. I pay for all my materials, by the way, just everyone that's listening here.
Let's check those invoices.
Yeah, I'll tell you. You want to check how much money I'm giving you for.
But
seriously, like, you know, when I'm going in there, I know that I'm dealing with people who actually understand what they're talking about. And that's a huge advantage. A huge advantage. And it, like, it's a big spread.
For the apprentice on his first day on site when he's sent off to the builder providers to get the
bucket of air,
the bubble for the spirit level. I'm sure that helps when someone behind the counter. And what size bubble do you want for your spirit level?
All the lads are switched on for that as well. They usually play the game.
Usually have them out in the warehouse for an hour and a half.
Yeah. All right, Pete. I know there's a lot to work through at the moment, but can you even cast your eye, or do you allow yourself to look to the short, medium term future of building, and particularly in Ireland, whether that be the direction it's going, trends that are coming?
Look, a bit like Pat said, it's very hard to have the crystal ball because, you know, there's so much things happening across the world globally. We have this absolute, the biggest challenge that the world has faced, and I'm not trying to be, you know, the guy, you know, promoting the disaster movie here, but, you know, if we don't change the way we live on this planet, we're going to have some serious issues with the planet going forward, polar caps melting, all that type of stuff. That's real. So people were talking about that a lot, but this is real now. People are acting. Sustainability is a huge thing going forward. So that alone is going to have a huge amount of work. And again, there's a push from the government because they have to meet those targets. So there's that work is going to be there the whole time. We've got a housing shortage, a huge housing shortage, for not only for homelessness, but also for a huge generation of people that want to buy their own homes. And we just simply do not have enough homes for them. There's not enough homes even to rent at the moment. So there's a huge demand there. But, you know, we've just come out of a pandemic, and, you know, we came out of it very strongly in terms of there wasn't much debt, and there wasn't, when I say debt, I mean monetary wise, financial debt, and then there wasn't, there's still a demand. So people are coming out wanting to spend money, which is kind of unusual when you go through a moment like that. I know I've never lived through a pandemic before, but coming out with something that you would have thought, okay, we could be in trouble here, but we're not. We're actually in a position where people want to spend money. So it's a very unusual market, but yet there's still talk of there may be a recession coming. So it's up and down. But if you're asking me, honestly, like, I can't keep up with the amount of jobs that I'm being asked to do, and the demand is there, and prices are quite high when it comes to materials, well, very high when it comes to materials. So if that demand is there, and if we can stabilise our material costs in any way, the future is very bright for construction. There's just absolutely no doubt about it. We don't have enough people to do the work as well. So in terms of, if you're someone who is in construction, you're in a good place. You're in a place where there's going to be plenty of work, and there is a demand for it. So I think we're in a good place for a while. So look, there's going to be plenty more dancing and plenty more building going on.
That's all right. Keep it, because I thought he was going to get the guns out there and start getting us doing press-ups with him.
Boom!
Like
let's
he's
do
doing
this.
In his MMA gym at 5 in the morning. Follow him on Instagram. Pete, always great to see you. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Aidan. Thank you, Pat. Right,
thanks.
Cheers, guys.
Building, roofing, plumbing, paving, painting, fencing, drilling, or decking. Whatever the job, big or small, your local Chadwicks has everything you need. From power tools and plant hire to doors and floors, bathrooms, gardening equipment, and more. Choose from a massive range, get expert advice, and next day delivery. We have 40 branches around Ireland. See chadwicks.ie. Chadwicks, let's get it done, 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 done. Terms and conditions apply. Right, myself and Pat are now joined by Jennifer Byrne, and Jennifer is a lecturer in construction at TU Dublin. Jennifer, you're welcome to the podcast. How are you?
I'm great, thank you, Aidan. Thanks for having me.
People obviously can't see you right now, but they might think, oh, I kind of know that voice. They would have known you also, whether you lectured them or not, but also from the big DIY challenge on the TV.
Yeah, that's correct.
I mean, can you not work in construction these days without having your own show? Is that how it works?
I think that's part of the passing, yeah, that you get to a certain stage and then you have to do a TV show.
Jennifer, thanks for joining us. We've lots to talk about, particularly in the world of construction and in the world of apprenticeships as well. Before we get into that, your own route to where you are now, lecturing the great and good who are coming through this industry, you started out a while back making cabinets?
A little while back, about 30 years. So I started my apprenticeship back in 91, but the path to that was a little bit tiresome to get there. I suppose I did woodwork in secondary school, and I did construction, and you know, I did engineering and all that sort of topics. But I wanted to do apprenticeship, and I wanted to work with my hands, and I wanted to work with wood was the main thing I wanted to work with. But at the time, I was told, you know, apprenticeships aren't for girls. I was an honours student. I wasn't allowed to do an apprenticeship, so I had to apply for apprenticeship myself. I wouldn't fill in the CAO application form, so therefore the career guidance teacher wouldn't entertain me at all and just go out to social area when that class was on. So I went down the route of applying through FOSS, was then in charge of it, and I applied for apprenticeship, and I started into an interview and went through the whole interview, and at the end of the interview they asked me what did I think a carpenter did, and I told them a carpenter made furniture, and they went, no, a carpenter doesn't make furniture. So I applied for the wrong apprenticeship. I applied for carpentry instead of cabinet making. I never heard of cabinet making before, so I learned the hard way what it was I wanted to do. So that was my rough kind of start in apprenticeship, was picking the wrong one.
And Jennifer, in 91, was there many girls applying for it?
No, there wasn't. And you know what? It sickens me to this day, because I was in so many papers, I was on radio shows and everything as being like one of the females, you know, and I was successful and I got Apprentice of the Year, you know, as my career went on. I'm still hearing the same stuff 30 years later. There's a bursary for females. We need more females. You know, it's the same song they play year on, year out. And, you know, I can see a bit of a movement at the moment, but it's just the same old thing you hear every year. We need more girls, but they don't do anything about getting more girls.
In your opinion and your experience, why hasn't that changed in 30 years? Why hasn't there been growth?
Well, I think apprenticeship itself, there's a snobbery in that, you know, apprenticeship is seen as a second choice. You know, college entry, CAO, that's the first choice. I mean, to me, there are two career paths. You can do one or the other. Some people are suitable for apprenticeship because apprenticeship takes, you know, skill, determination, hard work. And if you can't achieve that, well, then there's also college. And college is the CAO and the full-time programs and things like that. I mean, life for an apprentice is much harder when it gets to the college stage, because they're in there 35 hours a week, whereas a college student's probably doing 20 hours and have a social life. If you're an apprentice, you don't have a social life in college. You're flat out studying because it's more intense. So, I mean, I get really annoyed when people say, you know, apprenticeship is an easier route in college. It's not. You know, when you get to the training stage, it's actually harder.
Yeah. I do find that somewhat funny, because I look at some of my friends, a lot of whom are tradesmen, and then I look at other lads and girls who went to college and university and have office jobs, and I look at who's earning the more money now and who's Absolutely. Happier now. And it's not the lads in the offices, I put it that way.
No, and I mean, apprenticeship is also earn as you learn, and you know, and that is a thing. And I'll be talking about it later on, but I mean, one of our programs is Access to Apprenticeship, and I still remember, and it's the funniest thing, a couple of years back, our students went out to visit a Hyundai garage and they met apprentices on site. And the one takeaway they had from that when they came back was the third year apprentice has his own car. They have their own car. Like, I want to be an apprentice so I can get my own car, like in 2 years' time. And it was all, that's all. And that was the one take, was that you'll be able to afford a car in 2 or 3 years if you're an apprentice. You won't if you're going to college. And but that was a real eye opener, I think, for those kids, was that, like, you know, I can make that much money and learn and get a trade. Mm. And the other thing is freedom. And some of our students will come to us and they want to earn their apprenticeship, they want their card, and they want to travel the world. And you can travel the world with your passport. You have that right to work. You know, my own sister did it years ago, probably 12 years ago or more at this stage, went to Australia. She was a qualified car mechanic and worked as a parts manager at that time. And, you know, when all our friends were earning money picking whatever, lemons or waitressing or whatever they were doing, she went and worked in a garage for 3 months and earned enough money at the proper rate to pay for the rest of her holiday. Like, she went, spent a year away, and she had the ability to do that because she had her trades card. You know, she was a qualified mechanic and got the big money. She wasn't working for minimum wage.
But it's still trying to change a long-held perceived mindset and view and opinion. But of the people that are coming through the apprenticeship program, the craft, specific craft apprenticeship programs, there's quite a few of them.
There's a lot. There's about 27 altogether in the craft, I think, and it's adding on as we go along. TU Dublin delivers about 12 of those craft apprenticeships currently, and then other institutes across Ireland do it as well. So I suppose it's raising the awareness of them. And there's a few factors in that. If you're in a secondary school, you don't teach any practical subjects. The school isn't going to promote apprenticeships because they don't know anything much about them. There's also the whole thing with, I think it's not understood. So like a CAO form is easy to fill out and, you know, you can get people to help you doing that. With apprenticeship, it's a different thing. Like, first of all, the student needs to know what apprenticeship they're looking for. They also need to have an employer lined up. They need to get an employer to take them on, register them with SULAS and start the apprenticeship procedure. So there's a little bit more work involved in that. But I think the problem is they're not aware of apprenticeships.
Probably that's my question to you. Like, if I'm a parent of three girls, but not a college year, not leaving cert. But if I'm a parent now, a child is leaving cert, and it's deciding between CAO and, say, apprenticeship, what do I need to know? Because, like, the parent is going to be the one who's going to guide a child. And it'd be fair to say most of us are probably trying to guide our children towards college. And it's not for everybody, and we know. As an industry ourselves, the construction sector, like, we're crying out for labour, crying out for workers. And as a parent, you're saying, right, what is the career path? And is there a long-term career, you know, goal there? Is a long-term career, how long will that career last? Like, and you can see, you know, spoke to Peter Finn, you can see what Peter's done when he left his apprenticeship, and he's had many years experience. He now runs his own company, he has his own crew. To me, when you're hearing that as a parent, thinking, geez, yeah, there's something in this, you know, I could run me on. So if you had a blank sheet of paper, what would you say to a parent who's deciding, or, you know, tossing the, what am I going to do here for the?
Well, it's exactly as you're saying, it's not for everyone, and it's the individual, it's the child. What does the child want to do? And I think, and I see it both from the full-time programs, more so than the apprenticeship, where children come to college, they start a degree program because their friends are doing it, or because such a mate is doing it, or because my dad did it, so I'm doing it, or my mom did it, so I'm doing it. They're not going there for themselves. So what happens is then they drop out, which is horrible, you know, to see that. So I think that the child themselves need to make that informed decision and need to look at where they want to end up in their career path.
And if the students that you're putting through in the last number of years, like, what's drawn them to be an apprentice? What, like, you mentioned earlier, you wanted to work with wood and your hands. Like, is that still out there, that people want to work with their hands? And
I think it is, and it's having that variabilities in, you know, that not every day is going to be the same. Like, for me, I hate the mundane. I don't think I'd ever stay in an office or anything like that. I have to do something different every day. And I mean, that's what I love about the teaching. There's no 2 days are the same. Every day is different. And I think it's the same when you're working, like, in the crafts and the skills. You're going out and you're doing different things. So it's that love. Some people just like working outdoors and don't want to work, you know, and it depends on where you end up. So it really just, it depends what you want to work at. And I mean, for me, it's their career path. So on the full-time programme, we've had students coming through that have done our apprenticeship and are now doing the full-time programme to go higher. And we have students that have done the full-time programme and then go on doing apprenticeship, because during the full-time programme, they kind of go, do you know, I actually like the practical stuff more than the academic stuff. And I really want to engage, I really want to make furniture, or I really want to, you know, work in windows and doors. And so we've had lots of students go on and do, you know, carpentry and joinery and wood manufacturing finishing from our apprenticeship, or sorry, from our full-time programme. So their pathways. And then, and the other thing is then they come back maybe in 10 or 15 years and you do this, the construction management courses, and you then go and get, become a trainee foreman or whatever. And, you know, you end up working on a site, you know, managing people. So there's, you know, it's lifelong learning.
Jennifer, I know in other countries that the apprenticeship and, you know, a carpenter's job, electrician is seen as a very high position. Do you think we can get to that position in Ireland, or what do we need to do to get to that position?
It's hard to know. I mean, 30 years ago, when I was doing my apprenticeship, I was a really proud apprentice. And I've so many things behind me, but I will still say I'm a cabinet maker. It's still first and foremost what I am. And I think, like, there is a sense of pride in certain circles, like coming from the trade background, or, you know, and that's fine. Other countries, I think, do respect tradespeople more. Because, I mean, at the end of the day, like, you need tradespeople to build your houses, to fix things. Like, you'd be lost without them. So I think that culture shift, like, does need to happen.
So societally, a lot still needs to change. What about within the industry, and even with Chadwicks, and who are a leader in builders merchants, how can they help promote apprenticeships and also the perception of it?
Really, with apprenticeship, there needs to be more diversity in it. With apprenticeship, we're in Ireland, we're kind of stuck where most companies are run by small families. So to get an apprenticeship, you need to know somebody, related to somebody, live by somebody. Or it's the other end of the scale where they're big companies and they're doing aptitude tests and they're getting like 200-300 people applying for one apprenticeship or two apprenticeships. So there's no middle ground. So it's trying to bring that about. And I suppose if there was more publicity around, you know, the diversity in apprenticeship, you know, with the social economic backgrounds, the minority, gender minority and the minority, ethnic minorities and things like that as well. Visible signage, you know, things like that, showing different people working at different jobs, more promotion of it, maybe more competitions, even secondary school competitions, you know, asking them to make little projects, be it out of wood or out of metal or things like that. You know, sponsorship of, there's lots of pre-apprenticeship programs around Ireland, like sponsorship of pre-apprenticeship programs, or sponsorship like of, like our own program, the Access to Apprenticeship program, you know, just be more visible in promoting apprenticeship and having it as an option that students are aware of. Because when I go to a lot of trade events and, you know, careers days and things like that, we have lots of people coming up to us with students asking us, are there any apprenticeships for girls? And you're looking there going, yes, they're all for girls. And they'll say, but is there any specifically for girls? And you go, they're all for girls, every one of them. But is there anything like around hair or nails or something like that that the girls can do? And you're kind of going like, oh my God, like they're all for girls. Like the girls can do anything. The other end of it, you've girls coming over to you saying, I really want to do car mechanics, but I've never, ever looked at a car before. I don't, my dad gets my brother to help. He never asks me, like, and I'd really love to do this. So a lot of girls think they need to have a little bit of background knowledge before they do an apprenticeship. An apprenticeship, you don't need any knowledge. You're all starting off at zero.
Well, that's key. That's key. Know that.
Yeah. And I think That's the message we need to get out, is that it doesn't matter if you've come from a school where there's no woodwork taught or no metalwork or anything like that. You know, anyone can take up an apprenticeship.
And as Pete touched on earlier, just in terms of if someone might feel they don't have the physical capacity to be working on a site, the size of the cement bags are smaller now. Sites are safer. It's a better place to be.
It is. And I mean, health and safety is key. And, you know, people, there's so many people are out of work through accidents and things like that. So, I mean, health and safety is pushed to try and reduce the amount of workplace accidents and people out of work. But, I mean, there's so many mechanical aids. I mean, I was looking at one last year, which was really good. Hilti do one. They have mechanical arms. So if you're slabbing a roof, you have these mechanical arms to take the weight of the slabs. That's amazing. Like, and that can be used by anybody. And the same reason that the size of bags are reduced, you know. So, I mean,
well, the clothing as well, the safety wear, the boots. You know,
yeah.
We've gloves, the hats, the hard hats, high vis. Yeah. I mean, it's a huge difference. I mean, to be, look, there's obviously a pessimistic element of it, but be optimistic. Sort of, we've probably all trying to address it over the years, but there seems to be a big drive now, much more significant drive in relation to diversity. And certainly in Chadwicks, we have it, our CEOs involved in the apprenticeship in Ireland as well, and as a business and even as a sector. And I'm speaking to even our competition and suppliers. People really are trying to clue in, but they're trying to find an avenue and how they get into that. So, I mean, we spoke about parents and what parents would do. If I'm a builder and I'm thinking about taking on an apprentice, and probably some of the cons from a builder's perspective is, but what if I put a lot of time into this, whether it be a boy or a girl, if I put 2, 3, 4 years into them, and you just mentioned there that they're going to head off to Australia. That's frustrating. That is a frustrating element. Or it's probably a, what would you sort of say, that'd be the cautious element for my builders. If you're going to put in, if you're going to put in some time and money into it, an apprentice, and they up ships and go in 4 years, that's probably something that they probably, you know, what do I do as a builder? What's going to make it attractive for me to take on an apprentice?
Treat your apprentices right.
Yeah.
And they'll stay. So, I mean, if a person's been treated right and worked, they'll stay. So, you know, you want to keep them, you treat them right, basically. Yeah. So, like, why are they leaving? I mean, some will go away. They want a tour, go away for a year or so. That's fine. They'll come back. If they were treated right there, they'll come back. And I've known lots of cases where students, you know, qualified, go off, come back to the same place. There's always a job there for them.
So EDI, equality, diversity and inclusion group, you're heavily involved in that. You're also very involved with the Access to Apprenticeship Programme. What more can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so I mean, the Access Apprenticeship Programme first came about in about 2017, and it's very dear to my own heart because a lot of it is basically my story that I told you about picking the wrong apprenticeship. So the Access to Apprenticeship was set about to look at recruiting students in socially economic backgrounds, gender minority backgrounds and ethnic minority backgrounds. And basically, it was to introduce them to the whole concept of apprenticeship and what apprenticeship is. And some of these don't have the advantages in that they don't have aunts and uncles in crafts. So they're not coming from that background. So it was to bring these kids and introduce them to apprenticeship. So we run a 12-week course. 10 weeks is on site with us and 2 weeks is in work experience. They do a personal development module. So they learn how to write a CV, how to prepare for interviews, how to apply for jobs, things like that. They get a taster, maybe 1 or 2 days, of the different trades that we offer. So we do things like brick and stone, painting and decorating, wood manufacturing, finishing, metal fab, plumbing. We do, as I said, 12, 13 different trades that we do. And they also get to go to different employer events. So they go around the country. They have a life of Riley, really. They go off to all these different sites, you know, all the different ESB, or Nordair, and all these places, and get an insight to what it's like to be an apprentice on those. And they get to speak to apprentices on these sites as well, which is great for them because they can ask, you know, firsthand, what's it like being an apprentice? And there's no better person to promote apprenticeship than an apprentice. So it's great to hear them going through that. And we do things like we have an employer speed dating event where we get people from industry to come in and sit down and do, you know, really quick interviews with them. And all this really, it boosts their confidence and brings them around to a way of thinking that on the first day, it's like, oh, I don't know what apprenticeship I should do. And then 10 weeks later, it's, I'm doing this apprenticeship, I'm doing that one. So straight away, their mindset has been changed and they have a career set out for themselves and they're just deciding which career it's going to be. So it's great to see that change, you know, in 10 short weeks. So the Access to Apprenticeship Programme is also being rolled out in TU Shannon and was launched a couple of weeks ago. And they're doing the same thing, but down there. And I would love to see that being rolled out across the country. And, you know, it would really help to promote apprenticeship and would bring a lot of kids into the whole mindset of doing an apprenticeship. So that's something that I would like to see happening. For the diversity in the apprenticeship, like one of the things that we concentrate on is gender, and we try and get more girls into it. So to date, we've had 23 women that have taken part in the programme so far. We have about 75% of the students have progressed to an apprenticeship, so that's quite high for us as well. To support the girls as well, we started up an initiative called Women Building the Future Network. So that's a combination of the girls that are currently on our course, girls that have finished our course, girls that are in apprenticeship, girls that are qualified, of all ages. We have lunches, we have during COVID, we had virtual coffee mornings and things like that. And it's a great way, again, for the girls to ask each other questions. And we'd like to progress that a bit further and maybe take it into a mentorship and things like that as well. But that's something that we do. The other thing we do as well is we do a thing called Try a Trade. So we bring girls into the college and we do a morning. So a typical morning would be they do 2 hours of woodwork and the other half do 2 hours of plumbing, and then we switch them over so they get to experience two trades that morning. And that is a direct recruitment mechanism. Has been really good. We've got a lot of girls onto our programmes from that.
And what age group do you start that programme?
That programme is from 16, 17 to 24. So there is an age limit on that. So the restrictions we have are the same as kind of like an apprenticeship. So technically you have to have done your junior cert. You have to be over 16 to avail of apprenticeship. In reality, though, most employers will be looking for you to have your leaving cert. So, I mean, the limit, the first entry is junior cert, but we would kind of encourage people to go for the leaving cert. We have a lot of older ones, maybe 20, 21, that were early school leavers and have come back to us. So it's great to see them getting a second chance. You know,
that's important. You're never too old.
Never too old. No, like I've had, from the other, not on that programme, but I've had apprentices come through me, 38 years of age, that had did 20 odd years as an accountant and then switched. Do you know, on our full-time programme, we could have students in their 50s. Do you know, so you're never too old to learn a new career.
Well, Jennifer, it's been really eye-opening and very interesting to hear everything you've said. So thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. That's Jennifer Byrne, lecturer in construction at TU Dublin. Well, thanks to Jennifer and to Peter Finn for joining us earlier on in the podcast. A lot of food for thought there, Pat.
Yeah, look, I talked to two fantastic guests and people come from two different elements, really. And when you look at Pete's on hand in relation to on the site and sectors and the construction sector, and Jennifer being involved in trying to bring people into the construction sector. So yeah, really exciting. I think there is a lot of prospect. I think hopefully people can see that there is a future in construction. Very good. Very good. What did you think?
Yeah, really enjoyed it. I mean, Pete's always fun and his knowledge is second to none. Talking to Jennifer about the apprenticeships and just thinking back to it's a while now since I came through the school system and how many of my friends who chose the route of apprenticeships. And it was very different then to how it is now. It, in some ways it was easier because they just rang up a mate's dad and they got 2 weeks on site and it went from there. Now with the kind of the places that Jennifer spoke about that are in place through the access programs, that's a whole different world. And what really got me interested was that you're never too old to do it.
No, Andy, and again, I go back to the element of diversity. You can see Jennifer, she's got an absolute passion for the sector, and that really comes through when you're talking to her. So I'd say get Jennifer out in front of more people and say we'll see more people come through the sector.
Absolutely. If you ever want to get in touch with us on this podcast, maybe you want to ask Pat a question as to the price of your 2B1 in the next few weeks or anything else, you can email us. That's the easiest way. We have an address. It is podcast@chadwicks.ie. So we will wrap up episode one. Thank you for listening, and let's tell you who's going to be joining us on episode two when we look at the whole area that we're all in love with, outdoor living. Who have we got, Pat?
Well, we have Kieran Duggan from ETEX, who will be talking to us about seedless cladding, which is a huge sector now in outdoor gardening, replacing a lot of the old ways of construction with timber and brick. So Kieran's there. We also then have the famous Peter Donegan from DIY SOS Landscape, who we've had the pleasure of working with in the last series of DIY SOS which Chadwicks have been part of. So Peter is a super character, and again, massive amount of knowledge in relation to what's happening in outdoor gardening and the trends that he is setting or seeing around the world.
Really look forward to that. That's episode two of Chadwicks Under Construction, coming very soon. The Under Construction podcast is produced by the Podcast Studios for Chadwicks, Ireland's leading building merchants company, where you can choose from the best products and expert advice to get the job done. Drop into any of your local Chadwicks stores nationwide or visit us online at chadwicks.ie.